White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Ladies and gentlemen and students of the International Jew, welcome to tonight's episode in which Henry Ford and his writers really give it to the Jews. A real hiding, I would say. It's February 13th, 2014, and I am Carolyn Yeager. And my cohort here is somewhere. Hadding, are you there?
Okay. I guess my microphone got slightly unplugged.
Okay, well, it's time for you to say who you are.
I'm Hadding. Scott, the other guy.
Okay, I can barely hear you, and I've got my earphones on, so...
Okay.
Is that better? Speak up, please, and let's keep things quiet, except
Hello.
For your voice.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, you could be a little louder.
Okay.
What? That's scratchy. You're making all kinds of static. Okay, but while you're figuring out what you're doing, we must not fail to mention that this very night is the night 69 years ago that the RAF arrived in Dresden, Germany, the Florence on the Elbe, with their huge payload of incendiaries and phosphorus bombs and monster bombs, and decimated the city and its inhabitants. This was the first of what I thought was three major missions, but I just checked it out in Wikipedia, and it says there were four raids between the 13th and the 15th of February, 1945, with 722 heavy bombers, think about those planes, of the British Royal Air Force, and 527 heavy bombers. Ah, were those B-29s maybe? Of the United States Army Air Force, and they dropped more than 3,900 tons of high explosive bombs and incendiary devices on the city. And the bombing and the resulting firestorm destroyed over 1,600 acres of the city center, where all the great stuff was, and all the centuries of culture were. And between 22,000, I'm not saying that because that's wrong, and three more United States Air Force air raids followed, two of them on the 2nd of March and the 17th of April, where they finally went after the city's marshalling yard, and then another small raid on the 17th of April aimed at industrial areas. So all it took was a small raid to get at those industrial areas. They think we're there. So I just thought that being it's nighttime and it was at nighttime then on the 13th, that it was important for us to remember that. And when the show is over, we should all take a full minute and bow our head in memory of what those people went through. But I don't think we can do that during the show. Can't have a minute of silence. So, but we'll do it, you know, we'd like to do it. So, that any comment on that, Hattie?
Really. Is my sound level okay now?
No, you're really, really way down there. I don't know why.
Right, bring it up a little more.
Yeah, bring it up a lot.
Okay, how's that?
That's better.
Okay.
Okay, I'm moving my mic back so I don't, probably made noise doing it. So I'm not so loud, so people can turn up their volume if they need to.
Okay.
All right. Well, then, like I said, I think in this chapter, chapter 79 of the full 80 chapters that we'll be doing, I think they really were really giving it to the Jews. They were trying to give them a way out, though. We'll comment on that. But I thought there's some pretty good stuff in here.
Yeah.
Pretty good. And it wasn't excessively long, so I maybe we'll be able to comment a little bit more than we have been lately. I've been able to. So why don't you get started? We start out with this quote here.
Yes, it's a quote from Jesse H. Holmes, who was an academic of some kind. "It can hardly be an accident that antagonism directed against Jews is to be found pretty much everywhere in the world where Jews and non-Jews are associated. And as the Jews are the common element of the situation, it would seem probable, on the face of it, that the cause will be found in them rather than in the widely varying groups which feel this antagonism." From the American Hebrew, Professor Jesse H. Holmes.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Right. So here we go with chapter 79. Candid address to Jews on the Jewish problem. This is a candid address to the Jews of the United States, without subterfuge, without flattery, wholly without fear of all that they may threaten or can do. This attempt is made to set before them the Jewish question as their question, theirs to acknowledge, theirs to consider, theirs to solve. It is not a question of the Dearborn Independent at all. This paper has merely become the vehicle of unwelcome facts which have finally thrust themselves up for final disposal in this country. Damning this paper, compelling cheap city politicians to interfere with its sale, indulging a ribald humor concerning it, will not affect the facts at all. What the Dearborn Independent says is true, or it is untrue. If true, it ought to be considered. If untrue, it ought to be disproved. The present policy of Jewish leaders is to do neither, but to indulge in antics which go a long way toward illustrating what this paper has said.
Well, I must say that this paragraph here really sums up what I've been dealing with lately, in an exactly parallel way. So I'll leave it at that. You know, when people cannot deal with the facts but want to deal with it in a different way, like in the Jewish way. Okay.
What the Dearborn Independent says is true, and tens of thousands of Jews know it is true. No representative Jew has ever approached us with a denial of the truth of what has been stated in this paper. Neither has any unrepresentative Jew. The chief objection made against the publication of the facts is always stated in this form. What you say is true. Certain Jews are guilty of the things you charge. But why do you say Jew? Why do you not say Al Wood, Morris Guest, Louis Marshall, Samuel Untermeyer, Wolf Lamar, Edward Lauterbach, Felix Warburg? Why not let it go with these men's names? Why say Jew? When you say Jew, it sounds as if you blamed all the Jews. This objection has been seriously and courteously made by a number of Jews who have conferred with the Dearborn Independent on this series of articles, and has been as seriously and courteously considered. What is the answer? First, that these men are Jews. Second, that being Jews, these men constitute a problem for the Jews themselves. Third, it is time for someone to call attention to the necessity of cleaning up on that problem. There has been too much mincing of words. There has been too much concealment of names and relationship. The method which Jews were taking in this country with regard to concealment was heading them swiftly toward the same conditions which have menaced their race in Europe. And the Dearborn Independent would count no labor lost, that would rouse the Jews to a sense of the responsibility which rests with them to solve the Jewish question in this country, possibly the only country where it can be solved.
Yeah, let us be the only country that it can be solved. Okay, well, didn't get solved here either, but anyway, could have.
What's happening to a considerable degree is that Jews are being absorbed here.
I don't know.
They have corrupted the country to a great degree, and having done that, they're now being assimilated.
Well, yeah, they've changed it to a Jewish, the whole country, to a Jewish type country for themselves. I don't know that that's assimilation, though. That's not assimilation.
Well, they are. They're intermarrying, and, irreligious Jews are not, just not having very many children.
But assimilation means that you become like the people of the country
right.
that you have joined, and they don't do that.
Assimilating and intermarrying is what they're doing for the most part in this country.
I just keep telling what assimilating means, and you're calling that assimilating. That's not assimilating, but anyway. Okay.
Well, they're being absorbed. Let us be frank. If this paper had mentioned only the names of individual Jews, never mentioning their race, and had exposed them as isolated persons, it would have made no difference in the general Jewish reaction. The cry would still have been that the Jews were being attacked, whereas the other people of the country would have been just as much in the dark regarding the close bonds which unite all the groups of evil influences in this country. The purpose of this series of articles is to let in the light, to show the Jews generally that the stench had become too great, and to show the rest of the people where the stench arose.
I think that's amazing that they use the word stench.
Yeah?
That's really something.
The list of charges for the Jews of the United States to consider as affecting the distinguished members of their race is very serious. And the charges are true. It is true that there is a distinct Jewish idea in business and professional life which has eaten away the traditional principles of honor on which Anglo-Saxon life was erected. Every Jew knows that. Every non-Jew knows it. Here and there, a Jew in business or professional life makes a breakaway from trickery, deception, dishonesty, and exploitation of the gullible public, and achieves success with honor. But that Jew also knows that the majority of his brethren in the same line practice different methods. It is true that behind the amazing degeneracy of the modern stage and motion picture is a solid wall of Jewish ownership and control. This ownership and control must bear the responsibility for the rapid and dangerous deterioration which has come since such ownership and control was achieved.
Well, now there he's saying that, you know, a solid Jewish ownership and control of, entertainment in the form of stage dramas and musicals and so on, and motion pictures. And we have that today, and we act like, sometimes we act like we just discovered it, and a lot of people think that, you know, act like they don't even know it exists, and yet they knew that then. I mean, that it was already a fact around 1920, and before that, you know. These are things we need to keep in mind. What gets me is how long we have known these things and not been able to make a dent in it. In fact, it's just grown. That's it.
Okay. It is true that behind all the shoddy and make-believe and adulteration in the staples of life is the Jewish idea of prophets, making the ephah small and the shekel great.
Well, that's not necessarily a Jew saying that. See, because they're just saying that what they're after is to do that.
Well, I think using
Jews
the word...
Jews aren't even saying that.
The words ephah and shekel pretty much
what
means...
What is the ephah?
I looked that up. That's a biblical word. It means bushel.
Oh, they cheat on what they give you.
That's right. They're giving you less than the right measure and charging you too much for it.
Right, right. That's good. Uh-huh.
And that the initiators of American business into these shady practices were Jewish. It is idle to retort that apt pupils have been found among non-Jews. The point is that before Jewish influence began to be felt in American business, sound quality and a fair price were the rule. It is the Jews' ceaseless boast that wherever they go, they change business, but not for the better.
See, now, there again, they're saying that, and a lot of people will deny this. They're saying, though, that before, it probably was true, though, well, okay, then you get all these deniers. They're saying that in the beginning, you know, Anglo-Saxon practices were honorable and fair and so on. And compared to what the Jews do, they were. Basically, I would say. So, there again, you know, it's the Jews have changed our way of life here rather than actually assimilated into it. I think assimilated is the wrong word because they've come in and they have, rather than assimilating to Americans, basically of Anglo-Saxon stock and culture, They've changed us into being like them.
To a considerable degree, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, not totally. But.
It is true that beneath all the network of trivializing influences in literature, art, politics, economics, fashion, and sport is Jewish influence controlled by Jewish groups. Their Orientalism has served as a subtle poison to dry up the sound serum of Anglo-Saxon morality on which this country thrived in its formative years. Is it necessary to specify? In every movement toward a lower standard, a looser relationship, especially toward the overthrow of the old Christian safeguards, do not Jewish names predominate? These charges and many more have all been made in detail with evidence submitted and need not be repeated here. The present purpose is simply to get the problem squarely before the Jews of the United States. These charges are true and they cannot be disproved. Jewish leaders have not attempted to disprove them. Thousands of Jews have said that they are true. Then where is the obstacle to a settlement? This question is best answered by three typical replies made by Jews during the course of the present series. 1. What you say is true, but you should not say it.
I like that.
There is a principle seldom expressed among the Jews, but always acted on, that Jews should not have public attention called to them except by themselves or their chosen spokesman. This is unfortunate because any establishment of the Jews as an accepted and trusted part of the general citizenry must include their being known as such. In this country, the Jew should not only welcome the widest knowledge, unless he has something he fears to have known, but should himself undertake the exposure of those things which will eventually bring a shadow on the name of his race. The Jew has never done this,
when exposure could no longer be suppressed, the Jewish attitude has always been one of defense, regardless of the merits of the case. The Jew can do no wrong, is the principle acted upon. Never must a Gentile charge be admitted, however true it may be. Never must a Gentile reform be assisted, no matter how much needed. Now, that principle may do for other countries, but not for the United States. If the Jew is wise, he ought speedily to take warning that in this country the old line of action will not succeed. If Jews continue to show a disposition to defend the malefactors of their race against the just expostulations of the rest of the people, they must not be surprised if the public begins to view them all as one crowd, an inner nation set against the outer nation. Two.
Very good. Very, very, very good.
Okay. Response number two. What you say is true, but your conclusion is wrong. It is not for the Jew to change to your standards. It is for you to change to the Jew's standards.
That one's even better.
This is the fighting view. It admits that there are two ideas in conflict in the United States. What it unfairly terms the Puritanic idea, opposed by what it calls the Jewish universal idea. This view would command respect if it represented a superior morality in conflict with a lesser morality. If it represented a higher civilization against a lower civilization. Will any Jew contend that it does? Will any Jew deny that the influence of the Jewish idea in this generation is to break down such morality as we had? Will any Jew deny that the civilization of the United States before the advent of the Jews thither was superior to the highest civilization ever achieved by the Jews anywhere at any period of their history? There are two ideas in conflict. That is certain. The Jewish idea has a tremendous infiltrating force and a serious degenerative power. It is a powerfully disintegrating influence. It eats the substance out of the civilization which it attacks, destroys its moral virility, throws down its reverence, saps its respect for authority, casts a shadow on every basic principle.
Well, now, you know, the word parasitical comes up here. And Tan must like this little paragraph here very much. Although they don't even go as far as he does in the sense of parasites, but it's getting close. You know, that they are just totally destructive of all good. They just eat, he says, that it eats the substance out of the civilization. Pretty good, I must say.
That is the way the Jewish idea works in American civilization. Moral gravitation being, like physical gravitation, downward. It is not difficult to seduce human nature to lower levels, but it is a massive task to lift it to higher levels of morality and reverence and sober justice. And this latter task, organized Jewish effort has never attempted. The campaign in the United States is a campaign for the breakdown of the ideas that now obtain, not a lifting of them to a higher degree of nobility. If it were an attempt to substitute the austerity of the Mosaic law, the law given to Moses, not the ordinances decreed by Moses, for the half-hearted Christian idealism of the day, even that would be a task in which all right-hearted men could join. But Moses condemns the modern Jews more severely than anyone else could. They have rejected the Mosaic law. They have built their international power upon the exact opposite of the Mosaic law. Moses was given a law of human society which would have saved civilization in its greatest... Moses was given a law of human society which would have saved civilization its greatest tragedies. Moses has a social program, obedience to which for one day would completely wreck the Jewish international power. Moses is their judge. And when the law is established, Moses will be their destroyer. Let the Jews think seriously, what is this idea which they set up to follow? Let them penetrate the mists and seek out where this idea originated. Let them think forward and visualize the effect if this idea should become regnant. It will not become regnant here. There are safeguards here which the true Israelite will understand. But it is as certain as day that the idea will in the end destroy, utterly destroy, all who trust in it. How about that reference to the true Israelite?
Well, the true Israelite, it will not become regnant here. There are safeguards which the true Israelite will understand. What is he saying there? I didn't pay enough attention. You think he's talking about the white race there, the true Israelite?
Maybe. Could be.
Yeah, because they were very sympathetic with that. Let them think forward and visualize the effect of this idea.
It's a very ambiguously worded thing.
Yeah, they would do that because they wouldn't want to come right out with such.
The true Israelite, wink, wink, will understand.
Yeah.
Much is gained, however, from the attitude we are now discussing. We have gained clarity of understanding as to just what it is that is in collision. It is two ideas, and one of them is the idea of disruption, fostered by the false and delusive hope that disruption will spare the disruptor.
Well, that's what so many people will say. In fact, I think you're one, Hadding, who says they wouldn't want to destroy everything so much because then they would not have anything for themselves. And here they're saying that they have this delusive idea that they can spare themselves by, harming everyone else but not themselves. Well, they've done a pretty good job of that, I would say. So,
as I said, earlier, in another program, they need a certain level of chaos, but not too much.
I know, that's what you say, but I'm... Okay.
I was looking at Kevin MacDonald's book, Culture of Critique, a few days ago, and he says in his foreword that the Jews were not as destructive to other societies as they are, as they are to Northern European society because of our individualism. So they end up totally destroying our societies, whereas in, say, a Muslim or an Arab society, since those other people are also, they have a similar social organization, you know, based on kinship and extended family and all this sort of thing, they have more resistance to the Jewish predations, and the Jews can't just run wild the way they do among Northern Europeans, as they do in the United States.
Well, that might not be true, though. I was going to say the Jews can appear to be one of us, but plenty of Jews can appear to be one of the other Semitic groups. So,
That's not the point, though. The point is that that it's our individualism that makes us especially vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we know that theory's been going strong for quite a long time now.
Right. And it's not really in the Jews' interest to totally destroy a society that they're parasitizing, but they end up doing it because, you know, they're not.
Because, well, as Tan puts it, that's what parasites do. They're you know, they keep going until there's nothing left.
No, not necessarily.
They're not able not to.
Let me give you an analogy. There are diseases that came to Europe from the New World. Syphilis is one. Syphilis was a killer disease when it first arrived in Europe.
A disease, Hadding, is not necessarily a parasite.
It's like a parasite.
That's not a good analogy.
It is a good analogy because
you have to make it with something that's actually known to be a parasite.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, the disease prospers, so if it doesn't kill its host immediately, it has a chance to spread if it doesn't kill its host immediately. So what happens over time is that in the case of syphilis, the disease became milder in its effects so that you could live quite a long time with syphilis instead of dying of it in a short time. The disease itself mutated so that people could live with it longer. And you know how they say that the Russian Jew is the worst of the Jews?
Yeah.
I think this is analogous to the fact that they have not been living among Western men, individuals, as long as the Sephardic Jews have. The Sephardic Jews maybe were a little bit milder, had adapted somewhat to the way we are here so as not to bring things to a ruin so quickly.
Well, that's an interesting theory. I will say that.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Response number three, Jewish response number three. What you say is true. And we Jews could change it if we only would. The trouble is, we don't want to seem to be driven to it. But I don't see how otherwise we are to do it.
What they're saying is they can't change themselves. It's impossible for them to do that, but it doesn't seem to be in their interest. And they have to be forced into it. They don't see otherwise how it can happen. So there's a sign there that they're not able to do what's really in their best interest. In the long run, if they wanted to do what you suggest they want to do, to just go on and on and on by living off this society, white society.
Many Jews will recognize this sentiment as their own, but they will be readier to express it to a non-Jew than a Jew. Why? Because prophets must be prepared to suffer in Judah. Well, if you insist on playing Christ, you must expect to be crucified, said Lilienthal to Isaac Wise. Oy, Jerusalem, that stonest them that are sent to thee. Yet there is need of prophets in Judah today, men who will rise among the people and tell them plainly. The rabbinate is utterly bankrupt of the prophetic spirit. It has fallen into the blindness of the old priesthood. Here and there a literary man attempts to speak, but Jewish art has so accustomed the Jews to make believe that the writing is looked upon as a performance, nothing more.
You know, that's very, very good line, very clever, observant. But I want to say here that now they're going to go and talk a whole lot here about the Jewish past and I don't know what they're supposed to do and what God wants them to do or what they won't do and their their disobedience and so on. But, you know, that I just want to say that Ford is very takes the Old Testament Bible seriously. And, well, I don't know. They said he wasn't such, well, he uses it. And his writers, too. So they go with that by thinking that they can get the Jews to recognize that they were, that they want to still be this great people of Judah, and they need to change their ways in order to be what they were meant to be, and all that baloney, which I don't go along with at all. Just want to make that clear, you know, that they're not meant to be anything, and they're not, you know, I wouldn't give them, I wouldn't give them that much credit at all. So.
No one with a sense for such things, and there are believers still left in Judah, will doubt that the times are ripe for a great change respecting the Jews. So strong is the feeling among the remnant of believing Jews that it is interpreted as forewarnings of the Messianic period. Among the Judaized Christian sects, other interpretations are given to the times, most of which are used to support political Zionism, which represents the materialism and unbelief of present-day Judaism, and which will undoubtedly fail as a national restorative and as a political program. He's talking about the premillennialist Christian churches there, Christian Zionists. Mm-hmm. But however misinterpretative these sectarian and Jewish conclusions may be, they indicate a sense of imminent change. A greater change is indicated than migration to Palestine would be, for that would not mean any change at all in the world, and certainly no change for the better in the fortunes of the Jews. Christians, misguided Christians, one must say, who see God's alleged will of universal Jewish dominion fulfilled by means of the Jews' defiance and despite of the law given to Moses, ought to re-examine their ground for so strange and immoral a conclusion. The breakup of this civilization, this age of civilization, will occur because of the collapse of this system by which the Jew has obtained his hold on the nations. The system that gives him his hold is doomed, is passing. And the fallacy of Jewish tribal destiny to rule the world will pass with it. With this change already on the threshold, prophets should be expected to arise in Judah to recall their people to the law whose previous denial meant their overthrow. These prophets will not be of the Reform school, which denies the God of Israel as a divine person, nor will they be of the ultra-Orthodox school, which makes much of fringes and cookery. They will be of the race of the ancient prophets who spake boldly against Judah's violation of the fundamental law. Our confidence is that a sufficient number of Jews will see the truth and act upon it. What would be the greatest overturn the present Jewish idea, the disruptive Jewish idea, could possibly have? This, a knowledge that the way they are going is the way their own law foredooms to failure, and that the people they hope to triumph over are the people their own scriptures say they are not to triumph over. The first is beyond
dispute. Yeah, you know, I have some question marks after that. Obviously, do the scriptures say that they are not to triumph over what? Us? White people? I mean, what? How does that work there? I didn't know. That seems to be what they mean, what they're saying, but I didn't know that that was in the scriptures, or where is that in the law?
Well, maybe they mean the true Israelites.
Okay. Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a good guess there.
Be nice if they'd had a Bible passage listed there so we could see.
Yeah, that. Really, they should have.
The first is beyond dispute. There is no success for the Jew, no establishment of him in the world, except upon the basic law given to Moses. In any other attempt, he must fail when the structure collapses.
Fall. He must fall, right?
Okay, fall, fail. It amounts to the same. Okay. He must fall when the structure collapses. The second is in dispute, but is by no means beyond consideration, especially by Jews. In these matters, the Jews are much wiser than the so-called Christians. There is among the Jews the law of the brother and the law of the stranger. The law of the stranger permits several important things which the law of the brother prohibits. The Jews have been treating the rest of the world, often intentionally, sometimes as a matter of course, according to the law of the stranger. This is one of the influences which has helped to solidify Jewry against the rest of the world. Suppose it should be shown that the people in whose lands the Jews have never been persecuted, the people of those lands to which the Jews have never been driven, but to which they have hopefully and joyfully come, are not strangers, and are not to be treated as strangers, and so far from being strangers, are really the leaders and rulers of that ethical stream of influence of which the Jews, but for their disloyalty to their destiny, might have been an important part.
Oh, yes. Might have been, except not, never would have been, never could be, because of the way they are, and they don't change. But anyway, this is the idea of nurture, not nature, you know, that is so popular in contemporary thinking, even that. Meaning that, including that time is contemporary. That, well, if you just, you know, teach people the right way, you know, everybody can do right and do well and do just as well.
Suppose it should be shown that Judah, the driven part of Israel, has been blindly attacking the led part of Israel. Suppose it should be shown that Judah is not the Israel upon whom great destiny is to come, but a small part of that Israel, and not even a participating part until it returns.
So here they mean that the leadership is causing all of this. And they're a small number, and all the rest
of the
Jews.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's what it means. I think it's back to this British Israel idea.
Well. Oh, okay. So, all right. So Judah is just that one tribe, and all the rest are the true Israelites, who are not even what we consider today Jews at all, Europeans.
This must have confused people when it was first published.
Well, it confuses people now.
Yeah.
If that's the meaning, you know. And I don't like it when they're not real clear, but this could be... But most of this chapter is just great, but then it gets in this whole part here I didn't care for too much.
If these things should once take hold of the intensified consciousness of Judah as facts, there would be such a change in human society in general, such a change in the Jewish situation in particular, as would make a return to Palestine a mere summer excursion in comparison. Jews are thinking about these very matters now. They are thinking from within. They are seeking a reason, the thoughtful among them, for the sense of unfitness which they feel when they adopt the traditional attitude of enmity toward the others. The others, in this case, being the Anglo-Saxon peoples. The reason for this sense of impropriety is that here, in this land, the Jew will have to change his attitude of antagonism and dwell in peace as in a land prepared for him. Not as lord of it, by any means, but as a grateful wanderer, at last come home. Not as ruler, but as adding his bit to the righteousness, prosperity, and peace of the people. Huh. It is not a question of religion. Let the Jew get back his Mosaic religion. It is the most perfect social system ever devised, and directly contrary to the practical modern Jew's idea of things. It is not a question of intermarriage. Let the Jew keep as long as he pleases his idea that he is racially different. The suggestion of intermarriage is a crude one, and always indicates a lack of grasp of the Jewish question. Let the Jew keep all his traditions. They are not objectionable in any way. The slightest regard for them can only hold them as romantic. But let him shed his false notion of the Jew against the world. Let him shed his false program of breaking down Christendom by the infiltration of Orientalism into business, art, entertainment, and the professions. Let him abolish the false ideal that it is an honor to Jewry to save a guilty Jew from the common law, and a disgrace to Jewry to see a guilty Jew punished by the common law. Let him draw up notice on all the Jews of the United States, who by hook or crook are sowing vile seed in society, that the Jewish community charges itself with their misbehavior and will use methods well known to Jews to bring that misbehavior to an end. Let the Jew end forever the disgrace of an anti-defamation committee which grows frantic over innocent remarks on the part of Gentiles and is absolutely indifferent to the misdeeds of thousands of Jews who do more damage to the Jewish name than all the Gentile critics and newspapers could do in 20 years. No one can give the Jews a bad reputation but the Jews themselves.
Ha ha ha, I like that. That applies to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll note that the Germans are recovering their reputation in spite of all kinds of bad publicity.
That's right.
Most Jews who have given this matter a thought will agree. A good deal of bad temper exists among them, no doubt, and it will be hard for them to admit that anything the Dearborn Independent may contend for is right. But the idea here expressed, when divorced from this paper, does command respect from many Jews. The question remains, when will they start on the program here suggested? Human nature being what it is, They will hate to start at all if it will seem that the present agitation has compelled them. But would they have started without the agitation? It is possible for an additional number of Jews to catch the thought that this series of articles cannot be so easily explained away. We are not referring to the contents now, but to the fact that these articles exist at all, as being the creation of prejudice, or hatred, or vindictiveness, or ignorance. Suppose these articles should be truly a sign of the times for American Jewry. Suppose they offer a warning word, however unwelcome, and a light, however undesired, which it would be most unwise for Jews to ignore. Suppose these articles were conceived in a spirit far different than the average pro-Jewish spouter is competent to understand. Suppose the ultimate benefit will be mostly Judah's. Suppose the set time has now come for the Jews to quit their attitude of attacking everyone who shows them the truth, and to profit by this report of the poor figure they cut in American life today. Suppose these people who are moved to search and report the truth about Judah are truly the shofar calling the people to a new day. Is it wise to let stubbornness counsel? Is it wise to let pride close the ear? The enemies of the Jews are those who defend them for the pay of hire, or praise, or votes. The enemies of the Jews are those who bespeak them fair to their faces, and express quite different thoughts behind their backs. The writer of this personally knows that two of the principal Gentile defenders of the Jews, men who have shouted and ranted through the press on the Jews' behalf, are men who privately hold and express thoughts about the Jews, which are sheer hatred and enmity and fear. Mostly fear.
I wonder who he's talking about. Who would be shouting and ranting about the Jews and then privately hate them? I can't think of an example. I mean, it seems kind of strange.
The enemies
must have two people in mind. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
The enemies of the Jews are those who encourage them to take an attitude that they cannot hold in America. Not as affecting their personal liberty at all, but their social attitude and the public right. These are the enemies of the Jews, and yet these are the ones whom Judah counts his friends. They are hired friends, false friends, incapable of realizing for a moment what this whole question means. Judah's friends today are those who will speak the surgical truth to him, braving his fury in the knowledge that the future will justify the word. Judah's leaders have betrayed him in this country. They do not know they have crossed the Jordan. The Jews are as sheep without shepherds in this land. And the chief objection which the Jewish leaders have to the Dearborn Independent is that the Jews may read it and learn how shepherdless they are. The Jewish leaders' opposition to the Dearborn Independent rises mostly from the fear that the Jews may read it. The Jews have read it, and they have not found hatred. They have not found abuse and calumny. They have not found ignorance and malice. They have found statements of fact calmly set forth, not to arouse hatred among the non-Jews, but to arouse a sense of social responsibility among the Jews. These are significant times. The emergence of the Jewish question is a part of the culmination of destiny that has come upon us, not for harm, but for good. The Jews must uncover their eyes and unstop their ears, and they will see the beginning of the end of their travail, and they will hear that to which they have been too long heedless. The justification of a discussion of the Jewish question is the good of the Jews. And the greatest present obstacle to that good is the Jews themselves. The time is here when they shall see it. Issue of January 7th, 1922.
Yep, and that was only one more. I wonder what the actual last ones are. The time is here, they thought. Well, they had done this whole series, you know. They were wanting to bring about some kind of a real, things coming to a head here and solving this problem. They really thought they could do it. How many people have thought they could do something about the Jews? And the Jews went after them, then went after Ford, and got him to stop it. So, yeah. And he had to, and not in a friendly way, you know, and he had to say things like, well, he didn't really mean it after all, or things like that, you know, he had these people writing it and he didn't tell them what to say and, you know, crummy stuff like that, which later on he kind of halfway recanted on that recanting type stuff. But, you know, he had to do it. And then it's long been said that the Jews are a stubborn people. So this idea that they're going to, the idea, and then they listen to their leaders, don't they? You were talking about how we white people are so individualistic. But
yeah.
The Jews listen to their leaders, and so they're never going to go against their leadership, I don't
think. Yeah, not just their leaders either. They listen to each other. They're very big on groupthink.
Yeah. And so that's what crosses out the hopes that the Ford camp had, and probably even Hitler in the beginning, of trying to find a homeland for the Jews and all that stuff, thinking that they would cooperate and all of that. You know, giving them some help and so on. Well, it never happens.
You know what I regret here? It says the justification of a discussion of the Jewish question is the good of the Jews. Why does it have to be the good of the Jews? Why can't we discuss it for our own benefit?
Well, there you go. That was still there then. They had to act like they were trying to help the Jews. I don't know if they really felt, you know, believed that, but they had to act like they were. Well, we're going to have to pick this up next week. Thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you later.
Hooray, Jake, hooray, John, breaking out drinks all night long.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.